you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk Podcast. I am Pat Boyle, joined this week by Charlie Romeliotis and Scott King of NBCSportsChicago.com. Blackhawks rebuild is ongoing. Could the Hawks have included Corey Crawford in that rebuild? The remaining core four, they are upset with the direction management has taken. Should they be included in the rebuild process? Plus, the guys weigh in on the newest members of the Blackhawks, Nikita Zadorov and Matthias Janmark. It's all next on the Blackhawks Talk Podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
We have a lot to unpack here with Charlie Romeliotis and Scott King. I am Pat Boyle. Free agency began on Friday. We knew the Blackhawks were not going to re-sign Corey Crawford. He ends up getting a two-year deal at a $3.9 million AAV with the Devils. And then we kind of also found out, too, from Corey and from some of his teammates that the original offer that we thought was 1 year, $3.5 million for Crawford, was probably closer to $3 million. So, you know, as we've had time to digest this and we heard from Corey saying he was devastated by the news, do you think that they could have handled this a little bit differently, Charlie? Could they have gone to Corey on Thursday morning and said, look, we are going younger as an organization. We were already the youngest team in the bubble. In Edmonton, we plan to continue to go down those roads. We offered you a 1 year deal at $3 million. We can't come up much from that. We don't want to insult you, but you know, is this something you could live with? Do you want to see what's out there and we can circle back tomorrow evening, something like that, to not see it end like this and Corey becomes a part of the rebuild and not the definitive line in the sand of when the implosion started?
Yeah, I think I would have liked to see the organization handle it better as far as I wish, you know, it would have been nice if they had a conversation with Corey Crawford one way or another saying, hey, we're going to go in a different direction or this is what our best offer is. It just really sounded like the Blackhawks were content with moving on and going young in goal, right? It's not like Corey Crawford priced himself out of Chicago where they had to look for an alternative option. After Stan Bowman had announced on Thursday that they're moving on from Crawford, the second part of the surprising aspect was that he said, we're going to go young in goal. And Subban, Delia and Kevin Lincoln and have a combined 76 NHL starts together. So that to me didn't feel like, it just felt like they were prepared to move on from Corey Crawford. So rather than giving him a lowball offer, knowing that he's going to say no and not budging on the offer, I would have liked to seen them go to Crawford and say, hey, we're just going to move in a different direction regardless of what happens. And so I thought that could have been handled a little bit better because Corey Crawford, you know, really deserved to go into Friday's free agency also with kind of a framework of what he's looking at. And he had to act pretty quickly to sign with the New Jersey Devils.
I'm also surprised in how Crawford was dealt with. You know, you're talking about a guy who gets your franchise two cups, everybody on the team, appreciates and acknowledges how much he's able to do, but he was still very good last year. We saw that, we've talked about it on the podcast, but even beyond that, I guess what I'm still the most surprised about is how sudden this directional change occurred. Cause we go back to right after the bubble, when we hear from Stan Bowman, he's telling us we're going to see the same faces next year. So then all of a sudden that little window of time, you know, we expect Crawford to be brought back. We hear negotiations started even kind of recently. We're still kind of expecting him back, especially when they free up some cap space. And then it seems like they're deciding to go young. And also, I went back and read his recent comments, because there's kind of like, if you pay attention to Twitter, it's kind of a debate on if Stan really signaled that this is a full rebuild. And I still think it is, because at first people are just pointing to that he said, we're going to go young. He was just talking about the new goalies are going to get a chance to. But it's beyond that. He said he's going to do what teams are doing league-wide and look into young players to build up an organization. And then he also, a direct quote was, we're not trying to do anything other than grow through young players. That's something he said. So, I mean, it's pretty clear, and I understand that, but when you look to, yeah, Crawford probably had another two good years left, if not one, and he could have been re-signed pretty easily. And I also think that this, I'm sure we'll get to this later, it also makes sense when you're seeing the moves that the Hawks are making now and trying to make things a little easier on young goalies with getting the Zadorov, who's a 6'5 defenseman who Jeremy Colleton told me wants to play more of a shutdown role, and Yanmark, who is really good defensive forward in the Hawks' own end. So that's looks like they're rebuilding with making it easier on the younger goalies, but I'm still kind of surprised how suddenly that decision was reached, because that's something that you could take a whole long offseason to ponder and then realize that.
Scott, you bring up a good point about, you know, kind of the about face. And I'll even go back to last offseason when they signed Robin Leonard and DeHaan and Carpenter. You know, these are established veterans that they were looking to be pieces to help this team make the playoffs. And then we go to, you know, February of this past season, and you've got, you know, a porous defense that's allowing a lot of high danger chances. And you've got, if not the best goalie tandem, one of the best in Leonard and Crawford. You try to negotiate with Robin Leonard. And at that point, I don't know, pre-pandemic, Robin was probably asking for north of $6 million and maybe touching seven. And he minimum wanted 3 years of a guaranteed deal and probably wanted closer to four or five. So you decide at that point, like, that's too rich for your blood, that's not the road you're going to go down. You trade him at the deadline. And then we go to the bubble, and you decide that Corey Crawford gave you a better chance to win against Edmonton than Delia or Subban at 100%. And then you know, with that decision, you basically take yourself out of the lottery. You take yourself out of a 12.5% chance of getting the number one overall pick. If your, you know, philosophy is a true rebuild, that would be of interest to you. You know, if that was a direction you were going, that's a pretty sound thing to have a top eight pick with. At that point, you know, the Hawks were, they were scouting the top five and six players because that's where they were going to be slotted to be. Lafreniere, of course, is on the table. And Askarov, a franchise-changing goalie, is also in the picture. And if you know you possibly may not go down re-signing Corey, that would certainly be of interest to you. So you put that all together. And yeah, Scott, I you wonder when the about face or this change occurred, and like, why even extend Corey the $3 million offer if really you weren't going to negotiate? I'm trying to piece all that together. So, and then look, I thought that, I'll just say this to you, Charlie, do you think Corey, if he had the decision to make, and maybe you got to $3.4 million, okay, maybe you were able to say, you know what, we could do a 1 year, $3.4 million deal. And Corey and his representatives go out, and the best deal they could get is the jersey deal, $3.9 million times 2 years. And then you give him the option. Is $500,000 or $600,000, is that enough for you to walk away plus the second year? Or do you want to give this one more run in this uncertain climate that we're in? And, you know, maybe our minds will change and maybe the cap will go up. I mean, you know, we don't know exactly how things are going to play out. We think we do. But do you think that would have been something that Corey would have considered?
Yeah, I do think so. And, you know, when listening to Corey Crawford's press conference in New Jersey, he made it seem like there was no negotiation back and forth. So it's, you know, we're kind of looking at, okay, where did, you know, where was the discrepancy? Was it the second year? And he was asked outright, was it the second year? Was it, you know, they weren't coming, the Blackhawks weren't meeting you in the middle at the money. And he said there was just no negotiation. So it's not even like they went through the process of trying to meet somewhere. It just really felt like the Blackhawks had committed to going young in goal. And that's why I said at the beginning that, you know, I wish they just would have straight up told him, like, hey, you know, we're just going to go in a different direction and not even waste your time or our time. And so, but another thing, even though the fact that the Blackhawks do want to go younger and goal, and they do want to potentially develop their younger goaltenders, wouldn't it make sense to bring Corey Crawford back so you can have that young goaltender, not sheltered, but at least you can give him, you know, if you wanted to split the starts 41-41 or very similar, like, you know, 50-52-30, whatever it is, the math is, wouldn't you want to put a Colin Delia or a Malcolm Stubat in that position rather than, hey, here's the statistically the worst defense over the last 2 years, have fun? Like, that doesn't seem healthy for their
defense. In a condensed season, like, you know, yeah, when they start January, all sorts of different things that are on the table, but it would be the perfect way. You're going to have to rely on a two goalie setup. And like you said, it would be, to me, advantageous for these goalies that have, you know, little to none NHL experience to watch Corey go about his duties and his work and still get a ton of valuable experience.
Yeah, but and the fact that they drafted a goalie in the second round too makes it seem like, you know, we're kind of just going to tread water until this guy is ready to take over in a few years, right? So it doesn't even – they're not even set up in a position to succeed, Malcolm Subban, Colin Delia, and Kevin Lincoln. And so, you know, it's just, you know, the whole, when you put the whole picture together, it just really felt like the Blackhawks were committed to moving on from Corey Crawford. And that's where you wish there was a little bit more transparency and, you know, not like, here's our 1 year, $3 million offer, take it or leave it. Just more of like, hey, we're just going to move on entirely and, you know, let you kind of sort out where you want to go and have more time to collect your thoughts and figure out where you want to go next to Corey.
Well, that's a great point about what kind of veteran presence you would be for any of these young goalies, Charlie. I agree. It almost seems disrespectful to the way he was treated, but just in terms of making these younger guys more ready and better, you would want him around. And we just heard from Malcolm Subban recently, and he said one of the things that he looks back on with Crawford is watching Crawford implement what they go over from goaltending coach Jimmy Wade. So there's a lot of things younger goalies could see how he handles stuff, could see all of his experience. And I keep harping on this. I think, rebuilding, like Pat said, you usually don't talk about goalies, but also if you are going to go with young goalies, you have to break them in more of a backup role. Yeah, these guys have all kind of – Lankinen has not played an NHL game yet, but Subban was Corey's backup in the bubble, and then Delia obviously got some backup experience there. But they got to play, you know – they got to start like 30 games or something before they're thrown in and expected to make the vast majority of the starts. It's the NHL. It's very competitive. You're going to see a ton of shots from very good teams, very good shooters. And yeah, you can make these trades here where you're improving your D among the forward group and among defense a little bit. But I just think these guys had to get broken in a little bit more. And Crawford as a veteran really could have helped that a lot.
Moving away from Corey Crawford sent waves throughout the Blackhawks fan base. And, you know, a lot of it was really negative. It caught a lot of Blackhawks fans off guard. It caught members of this Blackhawks team off guard. So Jonathan Toews ended up speaking to Mark Lazarus on Saturday night. And they discussed the final four core players, of course, being Toews, Kane, Keith, and Seabrook, and how they felt about the direction that the team was taking, and specifically on Corey. And, you know, Laz starts his piece with saying, a source says they're pissed. The core guys have had enough. And then Toews went on to say, I've never been told that we were going through a rebuild. That has never been communicated to me. A lot of this comes as a shock because it's completely different direction than what we expected. On Crow not coming back, Toews said it's sad, really disappointing. Crow's given so much to this team. He was ready to bring more in the next few years. He had the mindset that he could help this team go deep in the playoffs again, and there's no doubt that he could. So clearly, guys, there's a disconnect between management and the core guys, and we've discussed it in the last couple of years, especially with, you know, the three consecutive years almost of missing the playoffs. Should the core be involved with the plans of the franchise? And I say yes to that. And I'll explain why. Because of the contract situations for Kane, Taves, and Keith, 3 years remaining and no movement clauses. Seabrook with 4 years remaining, no movement clause. They determine whether they want to stay in Chicago or leave. They are always looked up to as the leaders. It doesn't matter if it's Doc, DeBrinket, Strome, Boquist, whoever you bring into that locker room, they're going to look to the guys that have won three Stanley Cups and three of them are future Hall of Famers. So they need to be on board with the rebuild. If you want the rebuild to be successful, the leaders of the team need to buy into that. They need to be a part of the equation. And I do think you make exceptions to players that have brought this franchise so much. I mean, they do know what it takes to go up against teams in this current NHL climate and who are tough to play against. They might say, you know, while it seems like we need to get bigger and we're more physical, what we really need is more of a player who is going to go harder than that and is going to be tenacious and is going to be unrelenting when it comes to going to the tough areas. And that doesn't always mean it's a 6'3", 225 pound guy. It could be, you know, like a Braden Point type of player. If you know, so I'm just, that's an example, but I do really believe that you need to have a buy-in from the core players for a rebuild. And if they are totally against it, then you need to have the business discussion of, okay, how can we make this work then? If you don't want to be a part of this, if you see that for the next few years, the final 3 years on your deal, that the likelihood of us competing for a cup is very small, then let's find a better option for you and let's go about it that way. I mean, to me, it's a win-win on both sides, that transparency that we've been talking about.
Yeah, for Jonathan Taves to come out of the woodworks in the offseason and voice his frustration like this to the media is pretty significant, right? Because, you know, there have been rumblings, obviously, like when you don't have any postseason series wins since the 2015 Stanley Cup final and you miss the playoffs for consecutive years in a row. Yeah, they're going to be pretty furious behind the scenes. And, you know, they want to start trending in the right direction. And, you know, they thought they were, right? Like Kirby Doc took that next step in the postseason. Adam Boquist is a full-time NHL player. They spent years recouping these, you know, just drafting in the first round. And they had two first-round picks in 2018. So, you know, they felt like they were trending in the right direction. And now, you know, they're subtracting from the roster and it feels like they have to take a step back again for them to take a step forward. And I'm sure the players, the core players specifically, are very frustrated by it. And I agree with you, PB. I remember talking to Stan Bowman at the trade deadline asking, do these core players need to be involved in the process? And, you know, Stan made it seem like I don't go down there, you know, and tell them how to play, or that's, I leave that for the coaches. And so it's not fair for me to involve them in the day-to-day operations. And no one's saying that they need to be involved in the day-to-day transactions, right? Like, you just have to have buy-in from your core players, because then that filters into the locker room, right? Like Kirby Doc and Adam Boquist, they're looking up to Kane and Taze and Duncan Keith. And if those guys aren't bought in, that's going to filter around the locker room. And so you can't have that disconnect. Yeah, there can be a disconnect between the players and management. Like, I'm sure you're not going to you're going to agree with every decision, but if there's a significant disagreement with the players and management about the direction of the team, now that's filtering into the locker room, because now the core players aren't completely bought in. And now the young players are kind of like, well, what do we do here? So I think PBU raised a really good point, and it's just going to be interesting to see how the management group handles this going forward.
Yeah, I don't think the core and players should be involved with day-to-day business. You know, I was going to joke that after practice, you know, you don't want Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith to throw on really nice suits and go to Stan's office and have cigars and, you know, get on the horn. That's not going to happen. And those guys have different jobs for different reasons. What something a GM or a scout sees is going to be different than what a player sees on the ice. Or a player might have a really nice time with some other player at a camp or something, and they're always kind of pitching them. Like, they're not going to see eye to eye. So I don't know if they have to be on board, frankly. I think it's hard for them to get on board with a lot of these moves and deals, but I agree more towards a transparency. I think the core guys should kind of know what's going on, and I don't think they're always going to agree with it. I think you can go back to, you know, one of the moves reportedly that the core didn't like was Yarmolson. You go back to that, and then Q's gone, and you could throw Shaw in there too. And, you know, there's things that they haven't liked. And I think somewhere around there, a decision was probably made about what kind of conversations Stan Bowman and the players have, and how transparent are things, and when do we listen to the guys? And it's not, you know, it's not that they've never listened to the players. You know, I'm sure there's other examples, and this is not a significant one, but right away we know that Seabrook and Keith are the reason that Jordan Tootoo was on the team for a bit. They liked him. They liked his game, and the Hawks gave him a decent opportunity to show something. So I think a little more transparency would be better. I don't think that, you know, it's going to be a cat and mouse game. If you get into, we need the guys to buy in on every single thing, or we're not going to do anything.
Yeah. Look, I don't need them to be, you know, whiteboarding their draft prospect list or their top free agent targets. No, but they do need to. You could have the best blueprint and plan for rebuild and identify the players that you think are the key components to that and how you're going to go about doing it. If Kane and Toews and Keith don't buy in, your plan is not going to work. And if they don't buy in and aren't willing to work with the framework that you've set up and have told them that you are going to implement, then you need to remove them from the equation. There's no other way. It's unlike maybe many NHL teams, but because of the cachet that those individuals have. Hell, last week during the draft, a bunch of 18-year-olds, I would say 60% of them, their favorite player was Patrick Kane. And that's not a joke. I mean, that's 2020. Patrick Kane was the most recognizable name when it said, who's your favorite player in the NHL? That's globally. So certainly in that room of 23 individuals, they're going to be looking up to him. And if he's rolling his eyes because of a transaction or a system implementation or a benching or a line change, it's not going to help the room. And with what we're dealing with now, probably no fans, and, you know, a rebuild is never easy. It certainly helps when people are pulling the rope from the same direction. So, I mean, this is one area I really think they need to address, because if they want this to go in a successful manner, they're going to need those high profile core guys to be on board with the direction.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one way or another, you know, if I think a conversation certainly needs to happen between the management group and the core players about the direction of the franchise, because then once they get on the same page, you know, you're not going to agree with every decision. A guy's going to get traded and it's not going to make you happy. But overall, if you guys have agreed to a direction of the franchise, you can then report back to, you know, Dylan Strome, Alex DeBrincat, Kirby Dock, just be like, hey guys, just be patient with us because we're going through a little bit of a transition period. We're bought in. We all need to be on the same page going forward. And then it makes it easier inside the locker room. But right now, there just appears to be a disconnect between the players and the management, but also, you know, within the players group, right? Because I'm sure the young players don't know what to do either. It's like, well, do we follow the guys that have won 3 Stanley Cups? And even if they don't agree with these moves, like, should we follow their lead? Or, you know, do we have to be on board with the process and make sure that, you know, the coaching staff and the management, that we're not upsetting them, we're doing what they want. So that's where the disconnect could be happening. And that's where I think you need to have a conversation. We've been talking about this for a while too, that conversation just needs to happen between the core group and the management.
Yeah, you can see when things are bothering guys, whether it's direction of the team or one specific move. And I agree, when you have a lot of young players, Pat, you want to look to a certain direction from the leaders and how to handle things. And there's, like I mentioned, a lot of things they have not agreed with that happened recently, and it weighs on them a bit. But it's a fine line. It's a tricky thing because I think they're also professionals. And at the end of the day, they also make a lot of money to play hockey, still in a good situation in Chicago. So you definitely see things weigh on them. It'd be better to have them on board, certainly. And Pat, let me ask you this, just for so the listeners can get a handle. You've covered a lot of sports. How much does it happen across sports where key guys on a team have an influence on the GM?
Different sports. Like sure, Scotty, sure. You know, the NBA, it is a players' league, and players and their agents are deciding who's going to go where in the off season and who's going to create the next super team. So, you know, that's one extreme, and the NHL's nowhere near that. But as I said before, there's exceptions to the rules. If there are two individuals, Kane and Taves, who have brought X millions of dollars through the door because of their name and the way they have played and the championships that they have won, they, in my mind, have earned the right to be a part of some of the overall discussions that are, when something significant is changing that's going to impact their job and they are under contract, and because you gave them no movement clauses, you can't move them unless they agree to it. They hold some significant cards. It's smart to have them on board with that. It just is, that's good business. It doesn't make sense to not have them on board. So it depends on what the sport is and what league it is. And I think it also speaks to the individual. Like if it's Brandon Saad walking in and saying, I just can't believe this, whatever, it's not going to carry the same weight as if Jonathan Taves or Patrick Kane do it. It's just, that's not. So, you know, and so I mentioned Saad, he gets traded to Colorado for defenseman Nikita Zadarov. And they swapped AHL players, Dennis Gilbert and Anton Lindholm. So the Hawks retain $1 million of Saad's $6 million remaining. Zadorov agrees to his qualifying offer. So I think it saved them right around $1.8 million when it was all said and done. And a lot of people, you know, because Saad came back with the Artemi Panarin deal, we now forever are going to connect Panarin to whoever is representing, you know, the food chain of moves. And so it's now Zadorov, a third pairing defenseman for Artemi Panarin. I know that frustrates a lot of people. It frustrates me. I have to try to compartmentalize that and say that was, if we could do it over, all of us would 100 times over not trade Artemi Panarin. So now let's deal with what we have in front of us. Zadorov does help them defensively. He does bring some physicality to the equation, which this team needs. He is only 25 years of age. Here's what I don't want to see happen. Don't go out and automatically give him a 3-year or 4-year extension. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like what we did with Artem Anisimov. Let's not create something that we're going to have to deal with in years. Let's see how this plays out. See how he works with some of the young defensemen that you have coming through the pipeline. If everything goes like swimmingly and he exceeds expectations, then within the season, present him with a new deal and get a new deal done. But if it doesn't work out, you could A, move him at the trade deadline because he's in the final year of his deal and defensemen are always wanted. Maybe it's not working out with some of the young players in your pipeline, or maybe more of them have presented a reason to knock on the door of the NHL and you say, all right, I got to get Kalinuk or whoever into the fold here quicker. And I need to open up a spot. So I just don't want to see them rush into re-signing Zadorov because he's connected to the Panarin thing, and we don't always want to have like this one piece dangling in the wind, and we got, you know, at the end of next year, nothing for Artemi Panarin.
Yeah, two thoughts crossed my mind when this trade went down. One, they opened up $1.8 million in cap space, and my immediate thought was they could have used that to re-sign Corey Crawford, and they didn't. So they could have executed that trade a little bit before. And two, I thought part of the offseason priority list was trying to create spots on the blue line for your defensemen, right? Like we saw them trade Olimata. They could, because they need to open up a spot on the defenseman with Brent Seabrook coming back, and they're trying to get Ian Mitchell back into the fold. And then they add another body in there, which he brings a different element that the Blackhawks don't have, right? Like he's a physical presence. I know Connor Murphy brings that too, but I understand what they were trying to accomplish, but you know, it was like, well, they could have gotten draft picks. Or potentially maybe there was no market, because that would have been an easy answer, right? Like the NHL draft was last week. You know, that I would have easily rather than, you know, get a player back in return, just completely shed that salary and add a younger player, you know, potential second round pick or whatever. But it was a strange move. And, you know, I kind of, after they made the signing for Matthias Janmark, I thought, oh, okay, this trade was essentially Brandon Saad for Nikita Zadorov and Matthias Janmark. And so, you know, I don't know if that makes it any easier to swallow. It was just a little bit bizarre that they didn't get any assets back for them. And maybe it was because there was no market for Brandon Saad as far as draft picks and prospects go.
And Scotty, we talked to Zadorov via Zoom on Monday. He's a character, first of all, brings a lot of personality to the locker room. I love what he had to say, is that, you know, I'm going to make this team harder to play against. And being with Colorado, he certainly knew that this team at times is not tough to play against. He said that he spoke to Jeremy Colliton and that they want to make him part of the shutdown D pairing. And then as we talked about how important these leaders are on a team, the fact that Patrick Kane texted him and said, I'm happy that I'm not having to go up against you, is another indication of the shadow that these stars cast over a guy who's never even, you know, stepped into the Blackhawks dressing room as of yet, but it was still important for him. Like when he got that text from Kane, he felt good about it.
That's nice. It shows some respect when going to a new team. And we've heard before that Kane enjoyed playing with Saab and those guys were together too. So for him to shoot a guy a text right away, who's coming to Chicago. And like I said before, I mean, 6'5", that frame and Jeremy Colliton believing that he could play a good shutdown game to help the Hawks says a lot. And I love that. I think it's a good way to endear yourself when you're coming in for a guy as part of a trade where you're coming in for a guy like Saad that the fans really liked. Is he has a Chicago connection where I think he was 12 and there was a youth camp or something here. So he checked out his first NHL game in Chicago. Noted that, like with a lot of places, yeah, 75% of the fans are Chicago fans in Denver where he played. So definitely seemed really excited. Seems like the Hawks have a nice role for him. But yeah, again, it's kind of like this was before the Janmark trade where it's so he's the first guy that was part of a trade where right after Stan saying, yeah, the youth movement, then you get a guy who is going to be, what is he, 25, right?
Yeah, 25.
You're trading Saad, who's just 27. I know different positions, but again, we had, you know, almost a logjam of defensive talent in the youth in Rockford for the Hawks. The guy's going to be a big part of the team or expected to this year and going forward. So I think he slides right in. It just kind of sheds some doubt on where things are headed after the youth movement was alluded to.
So Charlie, when we look at the D right now, we looked at the left D, it's Keith, DeHaan, and Zadorov. On the right side, we have Boqvist, Mitchell, Murphy, and Seabrook. If we believe what Nikita was saying as far as making him like the shutdown pairing, would you see it like Zadorov Murphy being a combo? Or, I mean, I don't know what young player they would consider putting him with to start things out. Have you thought about maybe the D pairings for next year?
Yeah, that would make sense. And the good news is they didn't bring in another right-handed shot defenseman, because that would have really complicated things if Zadorov was a right-handed shot. But I really do think the pairings are going to be predicated on if Ian Mitchell is part of the equation, right? Like I think they really want to pair you're not going to pair Adam Boqvist and Ian Mitchell with, you know, two inexperienced guys. Like, you want to compliment them, right? So do you keep Adam Boqvist with Duncan Keith, and do you put Ian Mitchell with a guy like Calvin DeHaan, or do you put Ian Mitchell with a guy like Duncan Keith and put Calvin DeHaan with an Adam Boqvist and then let Zadorov and Seabrook be your third pairing? So you have a lot of different combinations that you can toy around with, but it really depends on I didn't even mention Connor Murphy's, but it really depends on what the order, I guess, how many bodies are going to be in this training camp roster, because right now you can really shuffle them anyway. And if Ian Mitchell is going to be a full-time NHL starter next year, then that really complicates things on what the pairings could be.
Do you think they're done? I mean, you kind of accidentally excluded Murphy, but like I could see, because Seabrook's contract's unmovable, and what Murphy makes, and, you know, I think you could argue his what he brings to the team is not quite what his AAV is, but some teams may look at it other ways. You might be able to retain $1 million of it, and then all of a sudden he fits in somebody's budget. Could you see Murphy being moved? Do you see any other tweaks to the blue line?
Yeah, I honestly do. I know we did a bold predictions podcast last week, or what was it, right? And we said there's going to be a surprise trade. And for me, you know, that was probably the Brandon Saad trade. I still think there could be moves to be had. Like, I'm looking at the blue line and I have no idea how this is going to shake out. And so I could see, you know, if they explore a Connor Murphy or a Calvin DeHaan, see what the two markets are for them, because they really want to break in Ian Mitchell. They really want, like, Stan Bowman was glowing at Ian Mitchell. Every time we asked him about him during the season, he's like, we wish he could be on the roster right now. So I don't know how they're going to make it work if Ian Mitchell is going to be part of the equation. Like, who's going to be the seventh defenseman? Because right now, if Ian Mitchell is part of it, the seventh defenseman is Brent Seabrook. And that's a very expensive seventh defenseman. And I'm sure it's going to be so complicated. So I really do feel like there could be more moves coming on the blue line.
We mentioned that Matthias Janmark has been added to the bottom six. He brings him, he plays a little center along with wing. I always find it funny when a guy comes in and at age 27, like Janmark is, your role is kind of, it is who you are. Like, all of a sudden you're not going to become a 40 goal scorer if you haven't been a 40 goal scorer at this point. And I always find, like, you know, he's going to help on the PK and whatnot. He's a defensive minded forward. He's a bottom six guy. But like, the question is always posed, like, well, what do you need to do to up your offensive side? It's like, instead of just buying in, like, hey, you know what? You guys need help defensively. I'm a forward who is able to do that. I can play a little center. That's not exactly a strong point on the depth chart right now. And I can just accept that role and be damn good at it. What I did find funny is, you know, when he was at his best, he said, he goes, the goaltending was so fantastic. And all I could think of was like, all right, well, you know, Matthias, you got a couple newbies behind you. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how this all plays out.
You're right about that, PB, too, because the guys are almost always prompted to say, yeah, I'm going to improve my offensive game. But that's not who they are. And yet they obviously had great goaltending there getting to the final. But I thought they're also a pretty good defensive team. He finished third per minutes and allowing the fewest scoring chances when he was on the ice. So, yeah, I got another move that he's going to be 28 in December. You're saying you're going with youth movement. You grab Janmark, but again, I think that's signaling, trying to make it easier on these young Hawks goaltenders you're going to focus on.
Yeah, it's another bottom six winger added to the equation, right? Like, they have a lot of those. And I was looking up his faceoff stats to see if maybe he's a defensive specialist that could, you know, do the Marcus Kruger role, right? Where you just really just, you're a defensive minded guy that can take those important faceoffs and try to alleviate some pressure off of, you know, Jonathan Toews, who took a lot of those in years past, and he didn't take many, and his faceoff percentage wasn't very good. Like, I think it was around 43%. So we'll see how the bodies shake out. And this is going to be another training camp battle. And maybe it goes back to my point also, they might not be done because there are so many bodies here and not enough, you know, only so many spots.
I agree. I think we're going to be in for maybe one more move, and maybe, you know, well, I would assume Dylan Strome is next on the to-do list, right?
Yep. Yep.
And we have about 6 million in cap space right about now.
Yeah. About 6 million.
Okay. You think with Strome, they're just gonna, I mean, I've heard some crazy numbers thrown around. I don't see offering him. I mean, the qualifying offer, do we know what that was?
Well, the qualifying offer could be less than $1 million, but okay. In the Blackhawks, like Dylan Strome doesn't have any leverage because he's not eligible for arbitration. So like the Blackhawks can theoretically just extend him they already did extend him the qualifying offer, but he could sign that for less than $1 million and, you know, their headaches go away with some of their cap issues. But if you're Dylan Strome, like I guess you don't want to really mess with him. But, you know, I look at Dominic Kubalik's number. His number came in at 2 years, 3.7 million, and he scored 30 goals for you, 26 at even strength. So to me, Dylan Strome has to be like in that $2 million range. Like I don't think he could be close to that Kubalik just yet.
I 100% agree with that. I was thinking $2 million, and if you get that as Dylan Strome, you're tap dancing because you know you're going to be a third line center with the way Kirby Dach started emerging in the Hawks offense. And look, he could still have a big role there and do a lot there and shore up his game that way, get a little better on the dot. But I think he, like you said, Charlie, he does not have a lot of negotiating power right now. I think he should take that and be happy with it. And we know he likes his teammates and likes being in Chicago.
Yeah. In a perfect world, I think he's a $2 million player right now, but in, the pandemic world that we're in, I wouldn't give him more than a $1.5 million. If I was trying to just make him happy and have a good soldier in the room. And to me, he needs to prove that he can play with somebody other than Alex DeBrincat, you know, like it's a prove it year for Dylan Strome. So if you want to give him 2 years at 1.5 AAV, make it a $3 million pact, I'm good with that. Otherwise, play for the qualifying offer. And go earn some money and make us make a tough decision down the road.
I wonder crazy how quickly. Sorry, Chad, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Scott.
I was gonna say this is crazy how quickly things changed. I remember him lighting it up with Kat and Kane right after the Schmaltz trade. We would have never guessed down the road we'd be talking about him signing for $1.5 million.
I know, but you know what? That was a 50-game sample size. You know.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if the Janmark signing affected anything from Strome's camp, right? Like his number came in at 2.25 and you're thinking, well, my client, you know, is just as good as Matthias Janmark, or maybe I know the roles are different, but the offensive production, Dylan Strome is very clearly the better offensive player. So that's why I think $2 million range is probably fair for both sides, like on a 2 year deal, but we'll see.
Okay. Time now for parting shots. Anything that you guys have heard through the rumor mill the last week or two, anything that you found interesting with some of the moves they made, could even be some of the moves around the NHL.
I want to get something out there just because I wonder what the fans' reaction would be. I was told that the Blackhawks had an offer for Brandon Saad last year for a second round pick. At the time, I was like, I wouldn't even do that. But I wonder if you revisited that right now, like if that offer was on the table from whatever team it was, if you would revisit something like that, where you'd rather just get the second round pick, shed the salary, maybe eat the $1 million that you did by acquiring those, you know, the two defensemen, one of them is an AHL defenseman. But I saw a lot of fan reaction that saying they couldn't get future assets. They couldn't get prospects or draft picks. Like that's what you usually do when you're trying to retool or rebuild. And so they did have that offer last year, but at the time it was like, you know, there's still 2 years left on the deal. Like, you know, you felt like the market value for Saad was a little bit better at the time. Like you could have got, like we've seen in years past that teams are straying away from trying to acquire a guy that has, is a UFA, like at the trade deadline, because you only get like 25 regular season games with him and then a postseason run. So more and more teams are trying to acquire guys that have 1 year, you get two postseason runs out of them. Right. So at the time it was a second round pick and, you know, I thought, no, like, I wouldn't even do that deal. But now, you know, obviously he had 1 year left on his contract. It would have made more sense to try to get a draft pick. But that's what I was saying previously in the podcast, that offer might not have been available. And I don't think teams would have given up draft picks.
I heard there was an offer that was made, Brandon Saad and Corey Crawford to Colorado. And
at the deadline? At the deadline?
Yeah, prior to the deadline, a little ahead of the deadline. And that the Hawks wanted Bowen Byram. And that's where I think the conversation came to an end.
How ironic. Scott, your thoughts.
Scott, what do you have for us?
No, I'll give Dennis Gilbert a parting shot. Part of the Saad trade, getting out of Chicago here. He was one of the good stories last year, I thought. You know, didn't get in a ton of games, but was kind of an unlikely guy to get into the NHL. And, you know, always loved the way a guy can drop the mitts and throw down. And I thought he was a tough guy and tried to make the most of some limited opportunities.
All right, guys. I had something from draft night that I heard that the Blackhawks had a chance to move up one spot to 16. That's where Montreal took Caden Gooley, the big 6'2", like 190, 195 pound defenseman out of the WHL. Brothers with Brendan Gooley. And a lot of people in hockey ops for the Blackhawks had Gooley as their number one target, and that the cost to move up that one spot was a fourth round pick, and that the Hawks decided that was too rich for their blood, and they stuck with 17 and ended up taking Lucas Reichel. So something to, you know, down the road as we, you know, we rehash prior drafts, remember the name Caden Gooley, and that the Hawks, from what I've heard, had the chance to move up one spot to take him, and instead they stayed where they were at 17 and took Reichel.
I almost feel like having more picks is more beneficial in the NHL draft because it's so hit or miss, right? Like, we see it in other sports like the NFL draft specifically, where you can package a few picks to move up and go get a player that, you know, maybe he won a college championship and he was one of the best players on the field. You know, it's so different with hockey that sometimes I feel like having as many picks as possible as you can, because then you can, then your percentage of, you know, if you only have like six draft picks, like you have to really hit on those six draft picks, right? Whereas if you have, you know, 9 or 10 draft picks, you have more chances of hitting. So we'll see. That's something we're going to certainly have to monitor going forward, because you hope it's not a situation where we mention they take one player and the next guy that goes off the board is Matt Barzal, you know, and it's like, oh boy, we really missed out on one.
No, and you mentioned the hit or miss rate. I think I saw last week only 40% of first round picks play 200 games in the NHL. Did you see that number?
Yep, I saw something similar. That's pretty crazy.
I mean, that's not even, I mean, that's just a barely okay NHL career, 200 games. I mean, it's something, but it's not like you're an established MVP or an all-star. That's not. And then, like, even look back to a couple years ago when we took Boqvist and Beaudin. Like, that's a perfect example of, like, right now Boqvist is playing, and this is, if we don't see Beaudin play much this season in the NHL, you begin to say, well, that maybe Boqvist was the hit in the first round and Beaudin was not.
Or then, like, you look at a guy like Quinn Hughes who went right before Boqvist at number 7, and he's already like a Norris Trophy candidate, probably going to be a Norris Trophy candidate in the years to come. So it's honestly, it's so hit or miss in the NHL draft. And we'll certainly have to monitor that going forward, because we would really hate to look back on the 2020 NHL draft knowing that they, you know, had the opportunity to trade up for one of the players that they really felt highly about. And, you know, he becomes a superstar and Lucas Reichel maybe just becomes like a top six forward. But time will tell on that. We're going to look back at that years from now.
Imagine getting to write about Gooley all through October. The traffic reports would be off the charts.
We leave that to our resident comedian, Scotty King. Hey, that is a wrap on this edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. For Charlie Romeliotis and Scott King, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening as always, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
Dreaming of starting your own podcast? Make it a reality with the Movo Pod Kit, the podcast bundle designed for aspiring podcasters ready to share their voice with the world. The Pod Kit is equipped with everything you'll need to sound like a pro, while being backed by a 1-year warranty with a US-based support team. Start your podcasting journey today with the Movo Pod Kit and let the world hear your story. Movo, creators wanted.